Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. And time for us to say hello and how are you to all our listeners as we start the new season. Now, I'm going to ask you to listen extra carefully because tonight we offer two innovations that should interest all of you. Just hang on a few seconds while I go through our regular rules. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, maker of the famous Heinz 57 varieties, presents Information Please, with four experts ready and willing to answer your questions. Mail them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them slightly, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment as to the questions we use. If we do use it, you'll get, with the compliments of the H.J. Heinz Company, $10 in war stamps and the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If the experts flop on your question, H.J. Heinz Company sends you $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, here's innovation number one. If the experts miss on all three parts of your question, beginning tonight, you get, in addition to the Encyclopedia Britannica, a $500 war bond instead of the usual $57 in war bonds and stamps. All questions remain our property. Information, please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. As for innovation number two, we start a new and regular service this evening. At the beginning and the end of every program, we shall furnish you with a brief news headline hot off the griddle of the NBC newsroom. And here's the first one. This is the night Hitler said would never come. Germany has been invaded, from the east as well as from the west. Troops of the American First Army are 5 miles across the border, and Russian patrols struck into East Prussia, withdrawing with valuable information. The Luftwaffe rose to challenge Allied planes today and lost 175 aircraft. And in the Pacific, our ships and bombers sank 89 Jap ships and sampans in a direct blow against Mindanao in the Philippines. And now, here's our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And we're happy as can be to be back on the air again and to say hello to all of you. We're happy, I say, and maybe a little confused, too, for in the first place, there are all those innovations, $500 if we're dumber than usual, and news headlines at the beginning and end of the program. And by the way, if Germany surrenders while we're on the air, we will not wait for the close of the show to tell you. Also, just to mix up things a little more, I have here a telegram to our producer from the man who was to be one of our guests tonight, and with your permission, I'll read it to you. It's addressed to Dan Golenpaul Associates, New York City. My dear Dan, as you know, I became ill while in Indiana last week, and upon my return, our family physician insisted I go to the hospital for a general checkup. I hope, nevertheless, they'd let me out in time to join the Information Please board tonight, but my doctor is a very determined gentleman, and no plea of mine for a reprieve moved him. I'm very disappointed to miss the program because I look forward to seeing you, as always, and the boys, as well as Mr. Knox, whose performance as Woodrow Wilson I admired so much. I hope you'll give me a rain check for a little later in the season. I'll be listening. Warmest personal regards, Wendell Wilkie. Well, we're awfully sorry that Mr. Wilkie can't be with us tonight. We hope he'll be with us again very soon. Now, on this confusing evening with so many announcements and credits, a little bit like a Selznick production this evening, I feel a little more at ease when I look across my table here and see the familiar, if not exactly bewitching, faces of my beloved colleagues, Mr. John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, the literary dictator of Western Connecticut.
Who also looks across the table without...
Feels the same way and worse, I know. Only I got there first. Our guests are, first, substituting for Mr. Wilkie, our good friend Jan Struther, poet, lecturer, and creator of Mrs. Miniver, and Mr. Alexander Knox, whose characterization of Wilson in Darrell Zanuck's great new picture of that name has been widely acclaimed. And now, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, let's settle down to work, shall we? Here we go with a question that comes to us from Lucille R. Wiepert of Avon, Connecticut. We have to get 2 out of 3. And it is a musical question. What is the royal or noble station of the people who are associated with the title of each of these musical excerpts? What is their royal or noble station? What grade do they have in the royal hierarchy? All right, Mr. Kahn, let's have the first. I had the musical Mr. Kieran's hand up at once. Mr. Kieran.
It's a prince. Someday my prince will come from Snow White.
Yes, that's exactly right. What happened to the rest of you folks?
Mr. Never Adams? Heard of it.
Never heard of Snow White? Oh, of course. You don't visit the Nickelodeon.
That's a movie.
It's a movie. Mr. Other, did you recognize it?
I'm afraid I didn't.
And Mr. Knox?
I'd heard it, but I didn't know what it was.
You see, it's very hard to be an expert on this program, Mr. Knox. Now the second excerpt, Mr. Kahn. I'll take it all back, Mr. Knox. So that was your hand up at once, huh?
It was. This one.
What's the musical excerpt? And what grade of royalty or nobility is indicated in the title?
I think he was a count.
Who?
Waldstein.
Yes. What was being played?
The opening of the Waldstein Sonata.
Yes. And no need to be modest. That's very good. You should come right out and say that very proudly.
Thank you.
Beethoven's Waldstein Sonata. You wouldn't know the opus number, would you?
No. I'm sorry.
If it were Adams, he would just name a number. Name a number, Mr. Adams.
26.
Well, 53. That's not bad. Dunninger couldn't do any better. Now the third and last. Three hands on this one. Miss Brother?
Death of the Mountain King.
Oh, don't sadden it up too much.
No, death
of... I don't think there's any death
but
in it.
But there's a king anyway.
Yes, there's a king. Yes. What is the... Mr. Kieran, what's the title?
In the Hall of the Mountain
Hall
King.
Hall of the Mountain.
Yes.
By Grieg.
Yes, Grieg's Hall of the Mountain King. And the king, of course, is the correct answer. That gives us Prince, Count, and King. And sends us on triumphantly to this one from M.A. Limers of Detroit, Michigan. Mr. Rother and gentlemen, what finally happened to these characters of fiction? What happened to Uriah Heep? Uriah Heep. Gosh, I don't know who Uriah Heep is.
Sure, we know
Mr.
who.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, I think that perhaps he was taken off to Australia.
Well, many of the characters in Dickens get taken off to Australia. I don't think Uriah Heep was.
Well, Micawber went off.
Micawber did. Mr. Adams?
I think he went honest.
Couldn't a man be honest in Australia?
Certainly.
And now.
Particularly if Australia's listening in. Well, gentlemen, that's wrong. You've got the right character, obviously. It's from what book, Mr. Adams?
David Copperfield.
David Copperfield. But Uriah Heep neither goes honest nor to Australia. On the contrary, he goes to prison for life. I have to count you wrong on that. Well, he was a villain, Mr.
Yeah,
Kieran.
I know he was an obsequious villain.
Dreadful fellow.
Yeah.
Yes, he should have been sent to prison. As for you trying to pretty it up, Adams. What finally happened to Madame Defarge? Madame Defarge. Something happened to her. And now, Mr. Kieran?
She was strangled, very well strangled, by Miss Price.
Now, was she strangled?
Oh. Well, she was killed.
Yes, she was killed.
By Miss Price.
Yes, by Miss Price. In what book?
In Tale of Two Cities
okay.
by Dickens. Is this an all Dickens book?
No. The next one's not by Dickens. But you know, it seems to me that she was shot. Rather than strangled.
I don't
wrong?
Think so. Maybe you're right. I haven't read the book in years, but she was done to death by Miss Pratt.
I'll
and
take that
very answer. Well done, too.
Mr. Knox, did you have anything to add to that?
I think she was shot in the dramatization and strangled in the book.
That's two deaths? I don't think that's legal.
They're different casts.
Different, I see. Mr. Knox, what happened to Miss Pratt? The one who did the strangling or shooting, as the case may be. Something happened to her, too, remember?
I've forgotten whether she got away or not.
Yes, she got away, but she lost her hearing as a result of the struggle.
Yes, yes.
Now, that gives us one right. What happened to John Tanner? Not a character in Dickens, just to identify him. John Tanner. Who is John Tanner, Miss Brother? I can...
Well, I know it's in Shaw. It's in...
That's right.
Oh, dear. Arms and the Man?
No.
Mr.
Knox?
Man, Superman, isn't it?
Go ahead, Mr. Knox. You're quite right.
I think that's as far as I can go.
Oh, it's not enough. Mr. Kidd.
Well, he winds up in Spain, and he wrote a book called The Handbook of the Revolutionist, and I think probably he married the girl, or she married him.
That's the point.
Yeah. He was against it, but I think she got him.
Yes, you tell the story beautifully. That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. Anne Whitfield, the heroine, announces
right.
that she has promised to marry him, as she delicately puts it, and so they marry. And it's in Man and Superman. We did get 2 out of 3 on that. Sending us on to this one from Mrs. R.E. Day of Chicago. Again, get 2 out of 3. Name a famous parent of each of these children. A famous parent. That's one. Queen Elizabeth. A famous parent of Queen Elizabeth. Mr. Knox.
Henry VIII.
Henry VIII, yes. And which of Henry VIII's wives was responsible for Queen Elizabeth, according to report? Don't you run those six whys through your mind? It's a little messy.
I'm doing it. I'm...
Mr. Kieran?
I think Ann Boylan.
Yes. Ann Boylan. How about a famous parent of Galahad? Galahad? It may surprise you to know that Galahad had any parents at all, but he did. Miss Strether?
Well...
Mr. Kieran?
He was reported to be the son of Launcelot.
Yes, yes.
But I don't think that the birth records were clear with regard to that.
Well, if you have to assign him a famous father, perhaps Launcelot is as good as any other. And according to one story, his mother never was given a name, but she was known as the Grail King's daughter. Now, how about Mrs. William G. McAdoo had a famous parent? Who was that? Mrs. William G. McAdoo, Mr. Knox.
President Wilson.
Yes. I don't think we should give you full credit for that. We're glad to get the answer. That gives us three famous parents out of three. How about... Here's an amusing poetry question from James Smilly of Essex Falls, New Jersey. Quote, suppose we get three lines of verse that mention card games, any kind of card game. Mr. Adams.
It was euchre.
It was what?
It was euchre, the same he did not understand.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right. It was euchre from...
plain language from Truthful James.
Perfectly good.
But he smiled as he sat by the table with a smile that was childlike and bland.
Ah, very good. That gives us euchre. Now, Mr. Kieran?
And who will stand on my right hand and keep the bridge with me?
That's a good one. Very good one. You're quoting Mr. Kieran from?
Macaulay. Horatius at the Bridge.
Horatius at the Bridge. That gives us bridge, and it gives us euchre. Now, Miss Struther.
Well, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rummy, any good?
Oh.
On this program, rather poor. Rather poor. I'll give you half credit. Mr. Knox.
And her face, it was mottled with gin.
Say, that's good. Very good. Why haven't we had you before, Mr. Knox? What are you quoting from, Mr. Knox?
I don't remember.
You can always substitute for Adams in case of illness. Mr. Kieran?
I'd give you another. The Queen of Hearts, she stole... the Knave of Hearts, he stole some tarts. Hearts is a game of cards.
Very good one. Yes. When I was 1 in 20, if 21 is a game...
That's right. That 21 is a game. A tough game.
And that
and then
gives
there's,
us... Mr. Adams?
That book by Booth Tarkington.
What's it called?
Monsieur Poker.
That's a fine way to start the season, Adams. Just when we're trying to pick up friends. I think we'll have a little interlude on that one. Now, one of our regular listeners sends in this question for our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer. Ben, can you, within as many seconds, give us six synonyms for food, good food?
Fair, cheer, provender, repast, eatables, delicacies, and Heinz tomato ketchup. Conjure up the memory of a steak. A great, big, beautiful 2-inch steak, charcoal blackened on the outside, rare and juicy in the center. Did I say steak? Well, a man can dream, can't he? And what do you need to finish the picture? Why, Heinz tomato ketchup. Or come down to earth and think of corned beef hash browned to a turn in the sizzling skillet. Steamy and savory under the crust, with just the right amount of mealy chopped potatoes mixed with the rosy bits of meat. And what do you need? Heinz tomato ketchup. Think of grilled ham and country fried potatoes. Such foods simply aren't ripe without the rich and spicy, slow-pouring zest of Heinz tomato ketchup. Made from full-ripe aristocrat tomatoes, vintage vinegar, and precious spices, the best-selling, the finest-tasting, the downright eatingest ketchup in all the world is Heinz tomato ketchup.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now, Mr. Struther and gentlemen, here's a question from Julius Washinsky of New York City, and get 2 out of 3. Again, this is a musical question. In what vehicle and what country would you be riding according to each of these musical excerpts? In what vehicle and in what country would you be riding? Let's have the first, Mr. Cohen. There's a dawning light of recognition in those lovely eyes of yours, Miss Struther.
Me you're talking to, I think it's Ireland, and I think it's one of those cars, you know, those sort of one horse, you know, the cars you sit one on each side of.
Jaunting cars.
Jaunting cars. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's quite right. Exactly, though, there is an exact phrase.
Low back car.
That's right, no, Mr. Adams.
When first I saw Sweet Peggy.
That's right.
It was on a market day.
Very good. How does it go on?
As she sat in her low-back car.
Oh, it gets into free verse after the first two lines.
I skip a few lines.
A low-backed car she drove and sat upon a truss of hay. That's right, a low-backed car, and it would be in the country of Ireland. Now the second, Mr. Kahn. Khan can't keep this up forever, you know, Miss Struther and gentlemen. How about a guess on that? What country, Miss Struther?
Well, I don't know, but it sounds a very jerky vehicle.
It is a bit jerky, yes.
Maybe it was a four-wheeled cart with one of the wheels off or something.
What an imagination you have. No, gentlemen, what was being played was Tchaikovsky's Troika, and that would be a Russian's... What sort of a vehicle, Mr. Kieran?
Fine.
Well, I think probably a sleigh drawn by three horses. Wouldn't that be a troika? Mr. Knox, have you ever...
Well, it's a sleigh, but I don't think it's necessarily three horses.
It's got to be three something.
Three something. Troika does have something to do with three. Well, we got that wrong. And now the third and last vehicle in country. Mr. Knox?
Shay,
in what country?
I think it's this country, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Better get him to sing it.
Yes, don't you sing it in Wilson?
I make an attempt to sing two lines of it in Wilson.
Well, we'll be glad to get those two lines. We don't have a very high standard of,
Put on your old gray bonnet with a blue ribbon on it while I hitch old Dobbin.
That's a bad note. Yeah, that's where you get stuck. Do you think you'll be all right, Mr. Adams, on this program?
Yeah, I think he's wonderful.
He's very good. Yeah, that's right. That gives us two out of three and sends us on to this question from John W.P. O'Brien in New York City. I think we ought to get all on this. It's not very hard. According to each of the following well-known lines, what is gone? Now, we'll exclude auctioneers' wares. You'll see what I mean. Tis here, tis gone. Mr. Kieran.
The ghost. Of Hamlet's father.
That's very good, yes. What was I quoting from, Mr. Kieran?
Hamlet.
You can't fool that man.
Act one, scene one.
Act one, scene one, yes. What's happening, Mr. Kieran?
Why, they're chasing this ghost and trying to get it to stand still and have a little chat and get its fingerprints taken, but it bobs around and...
Yes.
Finally goes west.
Only in the movie version. Now, here is another... A line of verse about something that's gone. All are gone. What? Mr. Knox.
The old familiar faces.
You're quoting from whom, Mr. Knox?
Oh.
You're quite right, Mr. Knox. Don't let me phase you or face you. Mr. Adams?
Charles Lamb.
Yeah. Charles Lamb. What's the title of the poem?
The Old Familiar Faces.
You see how easy that is, Mr. That's a lovely, melancholy poem by Charles Lamb. All are gone, the old familiar faces. And finally... Going, gone. What is Mr. Kieran?
The hair, according to the old advertisement for herbicide.
That's right. You say that...
Nothing personal in that, I hope.
Not on my part, Mr. Kieran. No, I thought you recited the lines with considerable emotion. Mm. Here is the one from Marion Farnham of Westchester, Pennsylvania. Yet two out of three. You all know who Aesculapius was. Mr. Adams, who was Aesculapius?
He was the boy whose business is on the doctor's cars.
Yes, that's quite right.
They take the oath.
The Hippocratic oath.
Well, he was a doctor.
He was a doctor in old Greek mythological times. If Dr. Aesculapius set up in practice on Mount Olympus, we're now in the realm of Greek mythology, as you can see, whom would he treat for these disorders? Suppose there was someone... who had a splitting headache. Now, who would that be? Mr. Knox.
Jupiter. Is it all right to call him Jupiter if he's
yes,
on Olympus?
Yes, Jupiter's fine. Yeah. Why Jupiter?
Well, people kept springing out of his head all
who
the time.
Who did?
Minerva did.
Yes, that's why it was known as a Minerva's headache, I think. She sprang from his head in Latin. In Greek, it was Athena who sprang from his head.
Yes.
Pallas, but the same fellow. Yes, now suppose somebody came to Dr. Aesculapius to be treated for superficial burns, or a superficial burn. Who might that be?
Well, it goes back to a Greek legend again. Mr. Knox gave us the first time, Estrella. Try that one.
Somebody put on a shirt, a burning shirt.
Nessus?
Nessus. Was it Nessus or Hercules?
The shirt of Nessus.
The shirt of Nessus that Hercules put on, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. It wasn't. It was an itching shirt, wasn't it, rather than a burning one?
Well, same thing.
Well, not exactly.
You ever had hives?
Yes, and we needn't go into it.
What do you do?
Mr. Kieran?
Milica.
Who?
Miliaga.
Well,
however you want to pronounce it. From Atalanta in Calydon. Don't you remember? When he was born, the goddess said that he would live as long as the brand that was burning on the heart. So his mother jumped out and grabbed the brand and put it out and saved it. So then she got heard that he went and killed somebody some relative. That's a long story.
Well, we're listening.
Finally, she throws the brand back on the fire and the fellow dies.
Yeah, it's terrible. That's not superficial. Of course, that wasn't the answer I was looking for, but I was very glad to get the news about Meliaga. Seems perfectly okay, Mr. Kieran. I was thinking of another story, perhaps a little more familiar than that. Mr. Knox, did you have a suggestion?
Well, when Cupid and Psyche were carrying on, didn't one of them drip wax on the other?
Very superficial.
Well, I said a superficial burn. That's quite the right answer, yes.
Gee, just a little wax?
A little wax, yes.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yes, Psyche spilled some oil on him in an endeavor to see him. He was her lover in disguise, and she got kind of curious to see what he looked like. And she spilled some oil from a taper, and he might have gone to Aesculapius to be treated for superficial burns. Now, how about someone who would want to be treated for a liver complaint? Who might that be? Miss Strother.
Prometheus.
Why?
Oh, because they were eating out his liver, those birds.
Vultures.
Yes, how did that happen? Why?
Well, he was chained up, and I suppose the vultures wanted something to eat.
You have such a practical mind.
One needs to be practical.
You leave all the poetry out of it. Mr. Kieran.
He was chained to the rock because he stole fire from heavens and brought it down to the earth for the benefit of mankind, and therefore, as a punishment by the gods, he was chained to the rocks. And the immortal vultures ate the liver that was immortal and kept growing and kept feeding on it.
You see the advantage of having had journalistic training, Mrs. Estrella?
Yes, I do.
See how he tells the story? Gets it all in the first sentence. That's quite right. Three out of three.
The vultures ever get anemia.
Here's one from Pauline Zuern of St. Louis, Missouri. Where in poetry are these contrasting words found within a single line of poetry? Honor and dishonor. Mr. Kieran, hand up at once.
His honor rooted in dishonor stood, and faith unfaithful kept him falsely true from Idols of the King by Tennyson.
That's perfect, Mr. Kieran. Yeah. not an easy one. Do you remember?
Yes,
which
easy. It's Launcelot and Guinevere.
Launcelot and Elaine is the you're talking of the situation.
Yes.
But the idol itself, the poem itself, is called Launcelot and Elaine.
No, not Launcelot and Elaine.
No?
No.
Oh. You mean I'm wrong again?
I think so. I don't think there's any Launcelot and Elaine.
Well, maybe not. I have Launcelot and Elaine down there. It's a long time since I've read Tennyson, and he says the same thing about me. How about this set of words that are opposite to each other? Heard and unheard. Heard and unheard. Mr. Knox. I'm sure you're right, Mr. Knox.
Nightingale has something to do with nightingale.
You're not too far away from it. Mr. Adams?
Melodies. Melodies heard are sweet. Melodies unheard are sweeter, something like that.
Yes, something like
soft
that.
Soft pipes play on.
That's the one, yes. You're both melodies quoting from what poem, Mr. Knox?
Ode to the Grecian Urn, Keats.
Can you give us the poem, the line perfectly now that Mr. Adams has roughed it up a bit for us?
For me?
Yes,
I think it's heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter.
Doesn't that sound better, Mr. Adams?
Better.
The way Mr.
Adams
puts it? Yes, quite right. And finally, I have one more set of oppositions. Cruel and kind. Cruel and kind. Mr. Knox?
I must be cruel only to be kind. Thus bad begins, but worse remains behind.
Very good. You're quoting from?
Hamlet.
Hamlet, yes. Have you ever done Hamlet, Mr. Knox?
Many years ago.
Yes, would you like to do it again?
Very much.
Actors
he
never
must have
change.
Been short pants.
next, ladies and gentlemen, some thoughts on Home by our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer.
I've been thinking with John Howard Payne, be it ever so humble, there's no place like home. Certainly, when it comes to cooking, and with all due regard for the wonders of science, there is no place like home. A good home kitchen for preparing the kind of honest, wholesome food you want to eat day after day. That's why H.J. Heinz Company has always put so much stress upon home-like flavor and quality. That home-like taste is the very essence of Heinz tradition. And as a symbol and reminder of it, this little two-story red brick house still standing amongst the busy Heinz factories and office buildings in Pittsburgh. It's the little house where Heinz began. And this year, as every fall around that little house, you can smell the wonderful, unforgettable aroma of fragrant spice, hot vinegar, sugar, and ripe aristocrat tomatoes bubbling together to make Heinz tomato ketchup. That thick, bright red and full-bodied sauce that has glorified America's meals for three generations.
Thank you. And now this question from E.W. Edge of Toronto, Ontario. Finish these quotes. The first is, have you erred? Have you erred? I'm leaving out my H's, Miss Strella. Have you erred?
I erred, but I don't know where it comes from.
Mr. Adams? Mr. Kieran?
No, sir.
Mr. Knox? Have you heard of the widow at Windsor?
Oh, yeah.
With an airy gold crown on her head. Mm. Yes, from Kipling's famous poem.
That's right.
You all recognized at once. That's one wrong. I have to get the next two right. And did you hear? And did you hear? Miss Strother.
Did you hear the news? And Patty, dear, and did you hear the news that's going round?
Yes,
it's the wearing of the green.
It's wearing of the green. The shamrock is forbid by law to grow on Irish ground. Have you ever heard? Finish that quotation. Have you ever heard? Well, I guess I'll have to finish it for you. Have you ever heard the wind go, you? It is a pitiful sound to hear. From what poem, Mr. Adams? One of your favorite poems.
Sounds like Riley.
Well, it's something like Riley. If it isn't Riley,
Eugene Field.
It's Eugene Field. The Night Wind by Eugene Field. But I guess we got two wrong out of three. That means that Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Edge of Toronto, Ontario, and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And I'm afraid that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Miss Strother, and thank you, Mr. Knox, for helping us to start the season so pleasantly. By the way, Mr. Knox appeared through the courtesy of Columbia Pictures, and we'll be seen next in Columbia's forthcoming picture, And Now Goodbye, by James Hilton. Tonight, Heinz 57 has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we'll have an extra special two-way broadcast with Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams at work here in New York, and our friends, the producer Gregory Ratoff, and the stage and screen star, Reginald Gardiner, answering questions from Hollywood. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please, 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. And now, our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, who you'll remember, has his news headline all ready for you at the very end of the program.
Why do you think back with such fondness to the dishes Mother used to make? It's because they were so full of flavor, fine flavor. And that's why H.J. Heinz 57 varieties have been beloved by America for more than three generations, because they're so rich in flavor. No news bulletins have come in since Information Please has been on the air, and we've had no further word on those American troops last heard from 5 miles across the border on German soil. But keep tuned to your NBC station for later news. And now, until next Monday night at the same time, H.J. Heinz Company wishes you good health and good evening. This is the National Broadcasting Company.